Well, I'm going to do a slightly unusual thing this morning in that we're not going to read the passage. You can read that at home, 2 Samuel chapter 13 and 14. But I'm just going to tell it as a story, and you can fill in back home by reading the whole thing. But to start the story, I need to ask you a question. How many of you can remember what it felt like when you first fell in love? You remember those feelings? Remember all that stuff going through your mind? What will they think? Will she notice me? Will he go out with me? What will other people say? What my friends say? What will my parents say? What will his or her parents say? All that stuff going on. It's amazing how our bodies can physically react through the emotion of love. Butterflies in the stomach is only the beginning of all the stuff that goes on. And so it was for this guy called Amnon. And he looked haggard because he was so in love with this beautiful girl called Tamar. But he couldn't see a way of going out with her. And that distressed him greatly. But fortunately for Amnon, he had a friend who had a good idea and hatched a plan. And his friend said, look, all you have to do, Amnon, is pretend to be unwell. And you can then send out and say, oh, well, I'm not feeling well. Would you come and visit me? And for sure, Tamar, she's bound to come and visit you. And so this is what Amnon did. And the plan worked a treat. And Tamar came round to see. To see Amnon. But so there was Tamar, the beautiful girl, before Amnon. But the thing is now, Amnon's hormones were now on overdrive. And he didn't want to settle just for a first date. He didn't want to settle for even that just first kiss. Now, I'm afraid Amnon, he wanted to go all the way. And he wanted to go there straight away. But Tamar, she was a proper girl and she knew how to do things properly, and she stepped back a bit and said, well, hang on a moment. There's ways and means, there's due process to go through here. We should talk to our parents and I'm sure it'll be okay. But it wouldn't be okay. Because Amnon and Tamar were related. They were half brothers and sisters. They shared the same father, the great King David, King of Israel, one of the greatest kings of Israel who ever was. Though they had different mothers. King David had lots of different wives. That's a side story. But you'd think, if they were half brothers and sisters, is that actually going to work? Is that right? Well, certainly in their Old Testament Jewish law, that wouldn't be right, because you can turn up Leviticus chapter 18 and see verses 6, 9 and 11, or you can turn up Deuteronomy chapter 27 verses 22, and you will see that that kind of relationship is way off limits. So Amnon was well out of order, but why would Tamar even consider it too? Well, this kind of stuff wasn't going to stand in Amnon's way. There was Tamar before him, and now his hormones were on hyperdrive. And he wanted to go all the way. He wanted to go there straight away. And so I'm sorry to say that he forced his way. Well, having done the deed, Amnon turned from bad to worse. Rather than seeing Tamar as beautiful, he now saw her as disgusting. And you see, having consumed, it was now time to simply discard. And he said, I want you out of my room, out of my house, and out of my life. Tamar protested, no, that would be an even greater disgrace than what you've already done. Do not send me away. But Amnon was having none of it. He really should have read his Old Testament law. Deuteronomy verse, chapter 22, verses 28 and 29 say that if you take advantage of a girl, then you need to marry her and never divorce her. Well, Amnon paid no attention to that and sent her away. She went away, she tore her ornamental royal robe. She was in disgrace, her life was torn, her life was broken, her life was effectively over. Mercifully, her full brother Absalom took her in. Well, Absalom, Amnon, half-brothers, you can imagine the enmity now between them. They hated each other's guts. King David, he heard of all that had happened and he was furious. Well, this wasn't making for nice, happy families, was it? I don't think they were going to have a good family get-together Christmas dinner this year. This is the brokenness that we see in families. This is the brokenness we see around our worlds. Before we come to communion, let's stand and sing a song that reflects that brokenness. Next part of the story. But from that brotherly hatred between Amnon and Absalom, 2 years passed with that hatred continuing. But then Absalom decided to throw a party. You see, it was sheep shearing time, and in their culture, when it was sheep shearing time, you gathered everyone together and you had a big celebration and party to celebrate the work that you have just done with your livestock. And Absalom said to the king, "Send all your sons, my brothers, bring them all, I'm going to throw a big party." And Amnon was invited too. And he came along. But it was a setup, a trap. When everyone was in high spirits and the wine was flowing freely, Absalom gave the signal and his servants plunged in the knives and killed Amnon dead. The rest of the brothers fled in worry and fearing for their lives, eventually working their way back to their father, the king, for refuge. The king was distraught hearing that his son was dead, and it was just a total family meltdown. And of course, Absalom knew the score. He knew that he couldn't hang around anymore. He took off and took himself into exile to live in a foreign country, now estranged from the king. The family was in a total mess. 3 more years passed. King David now was in a pickle. Time had passed and he really wanted to restore Absalom and have him brought back into the family. But he couldn't. The pain was just too deep. How could he? He had killed his other son. It was just too awful, too hard, and he couldn't bring himself to do it. But then one of his confidants hatched a plan and got the services of a wise old woman from Tekoa to come to King David and spin him a yarn. And the yarn went like this. "My lord the king, I once had a husband, but sadly and tragically he died. But the good news is that he left me with 2 fine young sons. But those sons were feisty and full of energy, and they got into an argument, and the argument got out of control, and one of the sons ended up killing the other. Oh, how my life is torn and broken. I've lost my husband, and now I've lost one of my sons. But worse, the extended family are now calling for the other one's blood. They want the eye for the eye. They want the tooth for the tooth. They want the life for the life. They want revenge. They want him dead. But if he's killed, what am I left with? No husbands, no sons. I will be destitute. There will be no one to inherit the family land. There will be no one to carry on my husband's name. Our family will be finished. O king, will you do something? Well, of course, what king would refuse to act in that kind of situation? Least of all, King David, with his acute sense of godly justice and his desire to do the right thing. And so King David immediately issues a decree saying, the son will be safe. No one can lay a hand on him. The woman presses in further and makes sure that the king really means it. And the king says, yes, indeed, not a hair from his head can fall to the ground without me knowing about it and taking action. And then comes the twist. Because the woman then says to King David, well, if you, king, would safeguard my estranged son with the things that he has done wrong, why will you not bring back your own son? And she continues with these words, like water spilt on the ground and lost, so we must all die. But that is not what God wants. No, he would rather devise ways so that the banished person does not need to remain banished from him. Let's review what we've got here. We have got inappropriate desire for relationship and connected with that, outright lust. We have rape. We have dereliction of duty and sending someone away in disgrace. We have enmity between the brothers. We have deception followed by cold-blooded murder. And then we have estrangement and family meltdown and fragmentation. All this in one family. The family of the great King David, one of the greatest kings Israel has ever had. I mean, this sounds like a season of EastEnders, not the kind of stuff that you want to hear from the Bible on a Sunday morning. But it is precisely into this mess, a situation of a main course of mess with mess sauce on top and a mess side salad on the side, that comes these wonderful words from the woman. Like water spilt on the ground and lost that cannot be recovered, so we must all die. But that is not what God wants. No, he rather devises ways so that the banished person does not need to remain banished from him. You see, King David would be quite right in the world's eyes to simply blank out the son Absalom, to suppress the hurt and the pain and just try and move on. To say, no, I'm never going to talk to you again. I'm never going to see you. I'm going to write you out of my will. I'm going to continue as if you never existed. That's what we do, isn't it? That's what people in the world do when they're hurt. They say, blank out, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. I'm just going to live my life my way. And that's over and done with. I'm finished. I'm going my way. That's what King David could have done. That's what loads of people in the world do with their hurts and their pains. They just blank it out and suppress it and shut it off and try and go forward. And that's what people do. But not God. God can't settle for that. God can't allow that. Now, God would try and finds a way to restore. Would devise ways so that the banished person does not need to remain banished. That they could come together again. That relationship could be restored. That things could be made right once again. You see, in that story, in just one verse, within one verse, 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 14, is the gospel, the good news. Like water spilt on the ground that cannot be recovered, we must all die. But that is not what God desires. He desires of ways of finding ways that the banished person need not remain banished from him. If you remember nothing else from this story, just remember that one reference, 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 14. The gospel in one verse that God wants to restore. He doesn't want people to be lost forever. And that's what we have rehearsed this morning with the communion. The story of Jesus, God finding a way so that people could be brought back together again and in relationship with him and with each other. So what about us and the mess in the wake of our lives and the broken relationships that we have experienced and we know are parked up there in the cupboards and the compartments of our lives and our own stories and histories? What about the times where we have blanked and simply tried to move on, not talking to someone ever again, or ignoring them, or just trying to find our own way? What about the ways we have suppressed the hurt and just thought, oh, maybe I've just got to live with this hurt and there's nothing to do. I've just got to try and carve a way forward. God wants you to stand up and enter his economy of forgiveness and grace. Now, it may be that you cannot think of a way of restoring. Or it may be you know exactly what you need to do. But either way, God wants to walk with you on that journey with you. And God will equip and empower and arrange things so that at least you can do your part and do your bit as far as it depends on you. You can't guarantee the other person will respond, but God will help you do your bit. But it could be that as I'm saying these words and talking about forgiveness of past hurts, maybe stuff that we have sat on for decades. It may be that you are sitting there thinking, Carl, will you shut up? I don't want to go there. I don't want to go back to that. It may be that as I talk and talk about just even the possibility of forgiveness, you feel as if I'm sticking a needle right into you. Well, maybe that's because God wants you now to simply say, here I am, help me to forgive. I'll stand and respond as the first move, but God, you're going to have to do the rest. We would love to pray with you and allow God to start that journey with you. But in praying with you, let me absolutely be clear. We cannot and will not devise solutions for you. That is not our role. That would not even be helpful. But rather, we simply want to say, Lord, for this person, may they experience your economy of forgiveness and grace and restoring. Spirit, equip them for their journey ahead. So in a moment, we will pray and we will wait on God. And I would invite people to respond. And respond knowing that we're not here to try and fix things for you, to tell you what to do, but to simply stand with you and call on God with you on your behalf.